Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on a bright, clear Wednesday where it is so doggone cold.
How cold is it?
I'll tell you, you can't see a cloud in the sky. But as we all know, the issue is how cold it really is up. Getting a little before I get to Sean Morris here on the okay. The Sunbury Motors seal, by the way. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Okay, I'm going to let you in a little bit of a secret before we get in, so everybody knows the inside joke before I get Sean in the line, okay?
All right.
Sean and I have known each other for 21 years. He is an absolute great guy on the planet, and on top of that, funniest guy on the planet. If you ever get him started on the Olympics in private while enjoying a refreshing beverage, your entertainment value increases exponentially.
Oh, he's a big fan.
Oh, yes. So, with that, let's go to the phone lines now and bring in Sean Morris from Big Ten Network, one of the truly outstanding analysts in college basketball. There's some very good ones out there, but Sean, to me, is one of the better ones without question. And, Sean, everything's about timing in life. I wanted to make sure with the Sochi Olympics coming up and the X Games, the Winter X Games at the same time, that I brought you in.
Yes, my heart is palpitating with the anticipation for both of those events, but I'll stick to hoops.
I did prepare the audience for that moment, by the way, just so you know. Sean, this Big Ten season, are we seeing – now, the Big Ten last year was, I think nobody would doubt was the number one conference in the country, stem to stern from day one of the season to the end of the season, even though Louisville won the championship. Is there a depth of quality in the conference this year that's impressing you?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there have been a couple of surprises either way, Steve. You know, one, you know, Ohio State recently, you know, kind of a head-scratcher with just their lack of taking care of the basketball, which is kind of unusual for them. But then, you drill down a little bit further, and, I mean, the fact that Northwestern has won three games in the league is a surprise on the pleasant end. You know, they struggle to score the ball. This game that I'm going to have the chance to call tonight, Wisconsin-Minnesota, two really good teams. So I think this is a league that right now that's looking at, you know, I think legitimately six bids. And, you know, you could, on an outside opportunity, have some other teams that are playing for that seventh because, you know, the quality of play in this league and teams that are able to kind of overcome injuries and things has been really impressive.
Someone asked me about Ohio State and Wisconsin because Ohio State's lost four in a row now. Wisconsin's lost back-to-back games. And I said, well, the problem is they're playing in the Big Ten now. I think that is actually a simple answer to what their issues are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other thing with Ohio State is
can't score.
They just struggle. They can't score, right. And when the Quentin Ross isn't scoring and, you know, when Lindsey Smith isn't scoring, their margin for error on that end of the floor wasn't real deep to begin with. And they haven't gotten anything out of the inside game of Amir Williams. And you compound that with the fact that they struggle taking care of the ball, which has really been a strength for them, and you kind of have the fact that they've lost four in a row. But, you know, they're still going to have a lot to say about how this league unfolds because, you know, they'll guard you and they'll defend you. Wisconsin, you know, they're still 16-2. And I think the thing that surprised me about the Indiana game was the dribble penetration that Indiana got on them. And, you know, their defense was better against Michigan. You know, the Wolverines just hit some tougher shots. So, you know, I think both of those teams ultimately are going to be fine. But if you're Ohio State now, you're worried about scoring.
You're getting ready for Wisconsin, Minnesota tonight, so I want to ask you about Wisconsin for a moment. Bo, as you and I both know, has done a brilliant job of playing to his talent and, for the most part, ratcheting down scores. This year, they're scoring. What are you seeing that's opened the door for him to score?
The fact that all of his, you know, all of his bigs are really, really good passers. Last year, they had guys, you know, Bergen was an okay passer, Brusewitz, and they were all capable three-point shooters. But now, with the way that Kaminsky's shooting the ball, he's leading the conference in three-point shooting percentage. You know, the kid Nigel Hayes is a very, very good shooter out to about 17 or 18 feet. I think the fact that their bigs really, truly can, across the board, pull you out away from the rim, I think that's what makes this team able to get up and down the floor and score. And also getting back Josh Goster. I don't think you know, anyone was more noticeable by his absence than he was last year with this team. And now they can go a little bit smaller. They can play he and Jackson and Brustall at the same time. So I think he gives them – his re-addition to them has been big for them as well.
I know in the preseason we had to vote, you know, all conference and so forth, but we also had to vote what our opinion would be the top three teams. And I think, like most other people, I put Michigan State one. The team I put on my ballot in the two spot was Iowa. I just liked what they had coming back. The way it's played out, what do you like and not like about Iowa?
Last year they were really, really solid defensively, and they've carried that over this year. The thing that has impressed me the most about them this year is the fact that they have been able to play with the Oglesby getting healthy again. They've been able to play 11 guys and play them consistently. And it's a team that I think may be built better for the NCAA tournament than maybe any other team in the league, because right now with the number of guys that they're playing, should someone get hurt, they're going to be able to withstand that because the other guys have gotten meaningful minutes, and they will guard you, they will push the pace. They were down 10 with a minute to go in the first half at home against Minnesota. They closed on an 8-0 run, and the game was never the same after that. And a big reason for that was Oglesby, who wasn't even healthy at the beginning of the year. So I think their depth, and they've got some guys like Marble and White that have been around.
Michigan State's winning and still no Adrian Payne. He missed the last four games. What does that tell you about what Tom Izzo has?
He has really, really good guard play with Appling. Harris was great again last night. And I like what the bigs that have filled in for Payne have done. You know, kind of like what Michigan has done in the absence of McGarry. They haven't had one guy that's filled that role, but they've had two or three. You know, at one game it'll be, you know, Gowna who will come in and kind of give them a lift. You know, other games it was Kaminsky who came in and shot the three ball. A few games ago it was Costello. So, you know, they have guys that understand what their roles are, and they're kind of by committee trying to fill what Payne was giving them. But I think for them to have the type of season that you and I both thought, Steve, coming into this year that they could do, they're going to need to get Adrian Payne out there. But the injury he's dealing with is just so, you know, difficult to monitor. You know, the sprained foot / plantar fasciitis, really the only way it gets better is by rest. And they're probably running at a point now where you want to get him at least some minutes, because you don't want to get too far out of basketball condition.
Sean, when I watched Michigan play a couple of weeks ago in person, a couple of things stuck out to me. You know, when you lose Burke and Hardaway, you expect, okay, there'll be a drop-off in the backcourt. They take more time on the offensive end now, so they've ratcheted down just a little bit the number of possessions in the game. But Stauskas, he has changed his game, leads this team in assists. When you watch the all-around player he's become just in a year, what sticks out to you?
His playmaking, but the thing that really hops out to me is that I don't think he gets enough credit for the type of defender he is.
Yeah.
You know, in the game that they came in and won in the Twin Cities at the first, might have been the first or second game of the conference season, you know, Hollins was killing them. And they put Stauskas on him, and that was over. I mean, Stauskas shut him down. And he's done that with other players throughout this season, and he's able to do things off the dribble. He showed glimpses of it last year, but with, you know, it's really helped take a lot of the pressure off, you know, Derek Walton. As a true freshman, he hasn't had to be the exclusive point guard, and I think that's made them, you know, just a far more difficult team to guard. And, you know, now teams, you know, try to run to him and try to run him off the three-point line, he'll get in and get to the rim and score, or he'll set his teammates up. And he's improved just so much, and his leadership as well. I mean, I would put Stauskas, even though he had a great freshman year, I would put Stauskas, Eliason, and Kaminsky. Those are three of the most improved players in the league right now.
Yeah, and you'll see Eliason tonight when you have Minnesota to go with Andre and Austin Hollins. Give me an idea of the job Richard Pitino's doing, because he has his own little imprint there with, except for Malik Smith, really players that he's inherited. What do you like about Minnesota and the job he's done?
They're playing a different style. I never thought, you know, if we both believed in reincarnation and I came back in eight lifetimes, I never thought I would see Maurice Walker chase anybody down and get a back tip.
Nope.
And I saw that against Ohio State. You know, so he's remade guys. Eliason and Walker have become, you know, far better physical condition to play the type of play that they want. And a guy, we talk a lot about transfers and additions. I don't overlook DeAndre Mathieu. I mean, what he has done and moving into the point, it's allowed him the option to kind of move Andre and Austin Hollins off the ball. So, you know, a guy like Andre Hollins doesn't have to bring it up and necessarily get the team in the offense all the time. Mathieu's carrying a lot of that load, and that's been big for them.
Yeah, he's the transfer out of Morehead State who's done very, very well for them. You brought up Northwestern. Chris Collins, did he change his style a little bit in midseason? Did he change how he wanted to play the game so he could get better results?
Absolutely. You know, if you go back, you know, I think they wanted to run. They wanted to get up and down the floor offensively. And, you know, it just wasn't paying dividends for him. And I got to be honest with you, you know, after the first couple of games, you kind of scratch your head and say, hey, where's this team going to get a conference win? And what they have done is that they've decided, hey, we're gonna control the pace, and we are just gonna completely lock down on the defensive end of the floor. And they've done that. I mean, to win a game in this league, when you're shooting sub 30% as they did last night against Purdue, I don't care whether you're at home or where you are, you know, that's impressive in its own right. So to answer your question, I think they have changed. They're gonna try to shorten the game because that's what they have there in terms of some talent. And then a guy like Trey Demps has become really their instant offense. I mean, of the three games that they have won in the league, he's been instrumental in the offensive end in all of them.
No question. And again, his ability to shoot the three, get involved, which, you know, for Chris Collins coming out of Duke, they love to do that. Nebraska has played brilliantly at home. They're 8-1 at home. They are averaging 15,000 a game at home. Give me an idea psychologically, because you've been through this before, where you can break through and get a win like they did against Ohio State on Monday night.
They've been so close in the two or three games leading up to that. You know, they had a chance to win the game at Purdue, you know, a few games prior to that. Let's not forget, you know, Michigan's sitting right now undefeated in the league. They were lucky to get out of Lincoln with a win.
71-7.
You know, it came right down to the last play. So I think they'd kind of been building toward that, and what I saw in that game is that you knew that Ohio State was going to make a run. You know, it went from 14 to 2, and then Ohio State came out and really kind of, you know, in the proverbial way, kind of punched them in the mouth. Well, Nebraska responded, and, you know, guys like Petaway then started to hit shots, and they took better care of the ball, and I think that'll allow them then to have some confidence the next time that they're on the road, potentially in that situation, they'll have an outcome that may more resemble the game versus Ohio State than the one that they had at Purdue and let get away.
Let's get to Penn State now. You're talking about close but not getting over the hump. That's this team. They've lost their 0-5 in games decided by 3 points or less, and their last four losses, three of them fall into that category. Three to Indiana, three to Minnesota, one to Purdue. You watch them either in person or in the studio. What are you seeing?
It's a team that is so close. They have to have Neubel and Frazier on the floor, you know, especially come winning time. You know, the game at home against Minnesota just hops out to me. Both of them are on the bench because they fouled out. As a result, John Johnson has to move over to the point guard where he's not necessarily at his, you know, it's not necessarily his strength. They get a steal from Mathieu, does Minnesota. They go down and score and end up winning the ball game. It's those sorts of things. They have to have those guys on the floor, and they have to have Frazier and Neubel playing well at the same time. And you talk about, you know, kind of mindsets. I go back to, you know, the game that they had. It may sound crazy to people, but the game they had at home against Princeton before Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they're up 20 points in the second half, and the game slips away. And when you're trying to get something built, I think that's going to have a longer lingering effect than maybe if, you know, you're at a place that's a little bit more established in terms of wins and losses. I think it's taken a while for them to shake that, to be honest with you.
Sean, with Sean Morris of BTN, absolutely, because well, I've talked about this with Patrick on shows, pregame shows, and so forth. You know, as an athlete, and you know as somebody who's since leaving the game, that you cannot allow one loss to then dovetail itself. And you can't let, for example, Ohio State beat you twice. And I think that's what's happened with them. I think they have not been the same team since that afternoon against Princeton, and you worked that game.
Yeah, it's such a fragile thing, and I think sometimes what people forget is that, look, you know, you're still talking about 18 to 22-year-old kids, and if that game has a different outcome, you know, are they going to go on a 3 or 4 game winning streak? I mean, who knows? But right. I just think that they're at a point where, you know, they've competed hard in every game, but it's come down to a stretch. You know, they had Indiana down double digits at home. They were taking it to Minnesota. It's just a matter of, ultimately, at this level, the other team is going to make a run at you, and it's okay. Do you kind of see then the mindset of here we go again, or is this going to be the game where the mindset kicks in is no, this stops now, and we're going to find a way to close this out? They're not. I mean, they are not that far away, and you know, I like so many of the other pieces that they have there. I think Ross Travis is a guy that kind of gets overlooked because, you know, some of the other bigs in the league, but Neubel and Frazier are the key to that team. I mean, no question about it.
Well, Sean, as you know, I think you're one of the best, and I want to ask you, when it comes to sitting in the studio and watching, what do you get out of that experience, and then what do you get out of the experience that you'll have tonight when you're courtside doing a game?
Well, the thing about being at the game, as you know, I mean, you have the atmosphere, and you know, Once the game starts, it kind of takes care of itself, you know. No one's tuning in, and I include my wife and my mother in this. They don't tune in to see me or hear me. I mean, they could barely care, probably. So you want the, you know, the game is really the focal point, and it's a defined period of time, and you have the atmosphere. The thing is, you know, about being in the studio is you're probably watching 2 or 3 games at the same time, and you kind of get a chance to look at things in more of a big picture way than, you know, if you're sitting there courtside. Hey, the most important thing that's going on right now is that particular game, regardless of whether there's 100 other games going on. They're both a lot of fun, and the fact they let me sit there and talk about basketball is one of the greatest scams ever perpetrated on the viewing public.
That's what I tell people all the time. I said, you know, I get to do football, I get to do basketball.
Yep.
Let me do some other sports along the way. I said, you got to look around. I said, I hope they don't catch on.
I won't rat you out if you don't rat me out.
That's a pact, my friend. Hey,
okay.
Great talking to you. Always appreciate that. Look forward to seeing you pretty soon here down the road.
I appreciate it very much. Look forward to seeing you as well.
Sean Morris of BTN. And if we could keep the secret safe with all of you, that would be fine. It is truly a great scam. They point you toward the field or court. You get the talk. They give you money. It is that four-letter word, scam. All right, we'll come back, scam you a little bit more on this show in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com.
Before I finish, let me say a special congratulations to Coach Joe Paterno. In my money, I think he's one of the greatest coaches ever in college sports. He's never forgotten that first and foremost, he's a teacher who's preparing his students not just for the season, but for life.
Mr. President, I want to say, as Dr. Jordan has said, how pleased we are and how proud that you would invite us here to the White House. And I want to present you with something that I think maybe signifies what Penn State athletics are all about. And this is a jersey that you can wear when you're out there chopping wood and riding the bicycle. Okay? And there's a couple of things about this jersey I want you to notice. Number one, as far as we're concerned, you're number one. Number two, there are no stripes on this jersey. We're not very flashy at Penn State. We don't put anybody's name on the back because we're team players. All right? And we're conservative.
Joe passed away 2 years ago today. We'll come back on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Hope you liked our little brief tribute there to Joe. 2 years ago today, he passed away. Cannot begin to tell you the personal influence on my life. Other than my father, the single most influential man I've ever met. I always put my father first. My father was an incredible guy. So, all right. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. We're going to have Jeff Byers on the show tomorrow to talk about Penn State wrestling. Corey Geiger is going to join the fray tomorrow. I like that. How do you like that? Fray.
Fray.
You like that? You know? Kevin, tomorrow will do an entire segment on wiping out Bengals punters and what it means to him.
Nah, I'm done with. I have one more football game, and I watch it just for the entertainment of watching football, and then I go deleting stuff on the DVR to go full bore Soshi.
Full bore Soshi?
Yep. I'll be all Olympics all the time.
I mean, do you even think that this thing's going to come off? I don't think so.
I think it'll happen. I think they're going to have one.
Well, you know what I find interesting? Yeah, first of all, London was incredible. Everybody will tell you that.
Absolutely.
They'll tell you Vancouver was off the charts. Vancouver's a gorgeous city to begin with. Great restaurants, great downtown. British Columbia is beautiful. You know, the number of people will tell you wonderful things about Vancouver and as an Olympic site. Now they take it here. Now, Sochi evidently is a gorgeous resort near the Black Sea in Russia. But here's the problem. There are a lot of really, really bad people that live near there. Let's examine the list. Let's start with Chechnya. Let's go to Soviet Georgia, which I believe the Russians invaded a few years ago, so they're not happy. Iran is close by. Turkey, Iraq, It's just, I mean, it's just not, it doesn't give you that comfortable feeling.
No, you're right. I mean, if you had your choice of putting it in Russia, somewhere in Russia, I would think Moscow would be the choice, like it was in, what was that, 1980?
Yeah, 1980.
I mean, I don't think anybody really wants to go to St. Petersburg for the Olympics, but this is a an interesting. I thought this when they first picked Sochi. I thought, where? And then I looked it up, and as you said, it's like a resort city on the Black Sea.
Yeah,
that is
sure.
Barely in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Right, but the problem is what's around it. It doesn't take long to go from bad places to there.
It's like having the Olympics, like in, well, it's like going from here. It's closer actually to get from Georgia and Azerbaijan, and for that matter, parts of Iran. You could actually, it would actually be closer to go there than I think it would be to go to the Atlanta Olympics in '96 from our area.
Yep, my point exactly. All right, don't forget, Mifflinburg's going to face Shikellamy tonight on WKOK. It's a 7:30 tip-off tonight. Game was actually originally scheduled for last night, but Kevin said he was too cold and it was slippery, so they moved the game back.
I said, let's
game
not do
The game will follow the Lady Braves and the JV and varsity games. There'll be no boys JV game tonight. Okay. So it'll be after the Lady Braves tonight, 7:30 this evening, Shikellamy and Mifflinburg from the Phil Lockoff Gym.
And just for fun, Steve, I map-quested it out. If you're driving from Tehran to Sochi, it's 20 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, that is often for somebody living in Selin's Grove. Sits there and goes, you know what? How long would it take me to drive from Tehran to Sochi? How long would that take?
But see, these are the things that I wonder about. You know, now that you got me thinking about it.
No, if you're in Olympic security, that's what you wonder about.
Well,
how long
right.
does it take for somebody to drive from Tehran to Sochi? It takes 20 hours. Guess what? Okay, there are a lot of bad people that live in that area. Now, there are millions of great people that live in that area. But unfortunately, all you need is some bad people. And unfortunately, as we know, some bad people live there. That's the problem with it. I mean, in terms of the location of it, I mean, it's very much like going to Lake Placid here. It's like, you know, it's Lake Placid's so close to Canada, much closer to Canada than it is to Philadelphia. But the problem is the countries around it and the fact that some of those countries appear to be safe havens for certain individuals that don't exactly see eye to eye as to how we do, as to how life should be lived. So let's put the Olympics there. All right, great. All right.
It's not the best choice the OSC's ever made.
No, it's not.
Or the IOC.
No, it's not. And it's something that it's going to enter into the equation. If it doesn't enter into the equation, if you sit there in a room of ideologues, then you're going to have this problem repeatedly. If you sit in a room with realistic people, you can avoid some of these problems.
Can you guess the southernmost city to hold the Olympics?
The southernmost city?
Yes.
To host what, the winter or summer?
The Winter Olympics. Sorry, the Winter Olympics.
Southernmost city to host the Winter Olympics.
Right. And when I say southernmost city, I'm talking about, like, closer to the equator for the Winter Olympics. There has been no Winter Olympics south of the equator.
Of course not. Right. Well, I'm trying to think, you know, in terms of the north of the equator between Turin, Nagano, and Squaw Valley.
You're in the ballpark, yep.
Okay. Yeah, Sapporo, Japan?
You're absolutely right. Nagano, Sapporo, and Squaw Valley would all be there. Salt Lake City would be close, but Nagano in 1998 is the southernmost. Now, that'll change in 2018 when they have it in Pyongyang.
Yeah, there's another great choice.
Yeah, I don't understand that one either. I really don't.
I think you got to start being careful with these things. And I, you know, you hate to deny a region, for example. And it's great that the Winter Olympics, for example, went to Australia in 2000.
That was a summer, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a summer game. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they've been to Australia twice, Melbourne in 52 and 56 and Sydney in 2000. Joe in Greensburg. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Pretty good. Hey, I'm just calling. I'm a frustrated Penn State basketball fan. And
really? I'm surprised by this. I'm taken aback.
Where do you think we really are? I mean,
fair question. Okay, let me explain where I think we are. Okay, let's start with that. Okay, all right. When Pat took over, he took over in June. So in other words, he took over weeks after the late signing period even happened. So he signs nobody. So, because he can. He didn't take over till June.
Right.
So what happens is that he ends up being a caretaker for the team that Ed recruited to play the 2011-2012 season. And he does a good enough, he certainly does a good enough job because that team was like taking over an expansion team.
Right.
You could tell, and Dick Girardi and I were very open about this, you could tell based on recruiting that once Taylor Battle, Jackson Jones, and that group left, they were going to be in deep trouble for the next season, and we knew it.
Correct.
The positional balance on that team that he recruited was all wrong for today's modern basketball. And that's another thing that we have openly talked about. Today's modern game, you must have a minimum of 3 3-point shooters on the floor. Now, you need a big man, too. And you have to have, obviously, a power forward and a big man, but you need at least three guys on the floor who can shoot the three. So the positional balance on that team moving forward was all wrong. So now he goes into his second season, and he starts to correct some of the positional balance problems that they have. But he loses Tim Frazier. Okay.
Right.
So last season ends up being, as we all know, a wash. Guys playing out of position and so forth. Now you get to this season. This season, I'll be frank with you, I have been very open. I thought they'd win 17 to 20 games, and I thought they'd be 9-9 in the Big Ten. So I might as well be up front with what my expectations were, Joe. Okay?
I thought they had a shot at the NCAA tournament. I really did.
Yeah. And I think that puts you in the neighborhood.
Yeah. And I went to the Pitt game, and I thought that they played well. And I said, wow, this bodes well for the upcoming season. But I don't know.
Right. And I was talking to Bill Hillgrove after that game, and Hillgrove looks at me and he says, geez, Steve, he says, your team's pretty good. I said, yeah. And then the Princeton thing happened.
Yeah.
And when you see it happen, you know it's happening. And that's the worst feeling. Well, look, I'm sorry, we have no breaks, and we're edging closer toward the cliff. They would have been better off in that game, literally, Joe, of coming down the stretch and getting shot clock violations. Because if they did, they would have won the game.
Yeah.
They'd have run Princeton out of time. But instead, something showed up in that game that really made me concerned. And that was this team's on the floor. Okay? This has nothing to do with Pat. On the floor, as a collective group, not understanding time and score. And that has been a consistent problem for them from that day forward. And I think it's a big problem as to why they lost to Indiana by 3, why they lost to Minnesota by 3, and why they lost by 1 point to Purdue the other night.
Yeah, that was really frustrating.
It's very frustrating. And you've noticed Pat is trying to micromanage all of this because he gets it. Yeah. And it's something the players, no matter how much you practice it, they have to get it. And yesterday, at the end of practice, Joe, they did one late game situation after another.
Uh-huh.
One after another they did. And that's something that this isn't new. They were doing this, and Pat's always done this. It's like Bill O'Brien with the two-minute drill. The last drill of every practice was always the two-minute drill. Okay. Well, for Pat, he does a series at the end of practice of late game every day.
Yeah.
And it's something that, for whatever reason, no matter what you call, you know, they have to be able to execute and have the confidence as they execute this thing. It's what, and for Pat, now let's get into the overall big picture. He's changed the athleticism and the positional balance on this team, which had to be changed. And for him, when you look at Brandon Taylor, he's a sophomore. That's Pat's first recruit.
Right.
That, in terms of the Patrick Chambers program, that's how young the Patrick Chambers program is. Yes, Ross Travis is older, but Pat didn't recruit him. Yes, Tim Frazier is older, but Pat didn't recruit him. So they're transitional players. They're his players and his system, but still, in terms of the kind of player he wants to recruit, Brandon was the first. And then he was able to get Johnny Johnson to transfer and some other transfers and so forth. You hate to look at fans that have suffered so much. Because believe me, I've been there for 32 years. I tell them, be patient. Because the fans are saying, well, geez, I've been patient this whole doggone time. Stop telling me to be patient.
Well, I have two questions. The first, what's
I'm not
the
quitting.
Point? No. The first is an observation, and it's been bothering me. Yep. Is it seems like when we're passing the ball and moving the ball really well with those guards, and they're passing the ball, we do really well. And I thought we were did really well in the first half of that Purdue game. But I've seen in situations when it comes down to the nitty gritty, I see some players doing some things that they probably shouldn't be doing, and trying to do too much. I'd rather say that. And I think that's what's cost us some games. But I don't know if that's on Pat Chambers. If that's how I look at it. But the second question, we have two more guards coming in the fall.
Yep.
I'm a little worried. How is this recruiting with other areas, like forward? Because I think that's an area, well, we need three-point shooters. Like you said, I definitely agree with that. But with forwards, I mean, What is that looking like to you? I mean, is there promise there?
Yeah, there is promise there because that's the next targeted area that they're going after. He needed a point guard to replace Tim. That's Shep Garner.
They
needed a point guard to replace Tim. And then with DJ going into his senior season coming up, he also wanted, and Allen Roberts is leaving the program as well, he wanted another off guard in there that could be a swing 3-2. Okay.
Okay.
So that's the part. That's the part they're taking care of. Now the next part is to target the 3-4-5 spots. So that's going to be the next targeted area for him of getting someone of size to get in there. So yeah, they're doing it in stages. But he only had so many scholarships to give, and point guard because of Tim leaving was a priority. That's where Shep Garner comes in. With DJ being next because he'll be a senior next year, they need to get another shooting guard in there as well. So that's how he took care of it. Now your first observation, Joe, you're spot on. That and I think you're talking about DJ Newbill and Tim Frazier have to do a better job of being the smartest players on the floor. They have to be the smartest players on the floor, and they have to know how deep to take a ball, and they can't want it so much they try to do too much. You have to be able to rely on what other people around you do.
Correct.
Okay? And you cannot overwork it. And in late game situations, Tim has overworked it, taken the ball in the traffic, not realized what options he's supposed to have out there when he's supposed to only take it to a certain point and then assess options. DJ, at the end of the first half against Purdue, goes to the bucket and puts one up with 10 seconds to go and misses it.
Right.
That goes back to time and score, Joe, and your older players have to be the smartest players on the floor. And in those two instances, they weren't.
Yeah, I mean, it's without a doubt, I mean, I think they would have won a couple games. They've been a lot smarter. And what really surprises me, you got Tim Frazier, the fifth-year senior, and DJ Newbill's a junior. Now, you think, I know DJ hasn't played a lot of basketball, but it just seems like that they should be a little bit smarter with the ball. And
agreed.
But this coach Chambers, I mean, he has to tell these guys too. I mean, he's seen it time and time again. I mean, I don't know if they're not listening to him or what, but I love Coach Chambers. I want him to be around for the next 15 years.
Yeah.
I don't want this guy going anywhere because I think he's the right guy. But, you know, you got to tell these guys, hey, do it the right way.
I mean, there's a reason that you see him micromanaging as much as he does.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, and at some point, you really want a couple of guys to be the extension of you on the floor. But they have to earn that part of it. And that goes back to your point.
Yeah. All right. Good talking to you, Steve.
Joe, we solved nothing, but it was fun talking to you.
Okay. All right. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, Kevin is lamenting that he may not be able to see an Olympics in person until 2024 at the earliest.
Yeah, 24 or maybe the Summer Games in 24, the Winter in 26, because the U.S. is bidding for both of those. You were asking about 22, the 22 Winter Olympics?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Poland, Norway, Kazakhstan, the Ukraine, and China have all applied. Sweden has decided against it.
Let's go for Norway. Norway's cool.
I'm with you on Norway. That'd be fine. Oslo would be fine.
Well, I mean, Lillehammer was great.
In 94, yeah. I had a T-shirt for that.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Why?
Because I went to Disney World and at Epcot.
Oh, you told me this story. Okay.
Yeah, I told you this story.
Yeah, I guess.
I didn't have to pay I didn't have to pay a tariff on it.
That's great. Okay. All right. I think that that's another thing they have to be smart about. You know, my concern is they take like the 22 Winter Olympics and they put it back in China. And after 2008 was a disaster.
Well, they're not going to do that because they have Pyongyang in 18, and that's too close.
Right. Yeah, that was a disaster. So, I mean, let's go to Norway. And you know what? We'll send you up there, order you some elk. It'll be great.
You could do it for my 50th birthday.
Sure. I was thinking about actually taking a gift certificate over to the Susquehanna Valley Country Club.
Why did I even bother? Why did I?
Get a golf shirt.
Man, some things, as soon as you say it, you want to take it right back.
That's like a daily occurrence with you on this show.
You have no idea.
Oh, yeah, I do.
I'm going to go do a basketball game. You can kick back, relax, put your feet up the rest of the night.
And believe me, I will.